first. Aurelians are fast, and Ayla's one of the fastest, but skyfish are always faster. One from above, one coming in from behind to my left, the other to my right. They're pushing us to maximum speed, which prevents Ayla from getting a good weave. As they close range, I open every coolant valve in my flame suit. Chris has stocked it. The firing starts. We're close enough for a flick roll. As heat erupts over my shoulder, Ayla's wings contract and we curl under the other dragon. I didn't have a chance to properly tether my boots. I have to hope they stay hooked in the stirrups. We pass so close over fields of the furish plain that I make out individual tilled rows. And then we come up from behind the leader, only to find the other two looping back behind us again. We fire, they fire, and I feel the first burn go down my back. I smell burning leather, but the coolant prevents the worst of the damage on my skin. The leader screams. Bardolph. My aim was true, and he was knocked back with the force of the blast, careening sideways and down toward the fields below. One down, four to go. And we're fine. We just have to outlast them long enough for them to run out. But I know the odds of my surviving longer than it takes two skyfish to run out is unlikely. And after that, the two Storm Scourge riders following behind will be there to clean up what's left as we tire. The point isn't to survive. The point is to lead them away. So I hug Ayla's back, close my eyes, and dig my heels into her side. Just keep going. We don't bother with maneuvers after that. We take hits once, twice more on our backs, as the flat farmland gives way to hills. My suit disintegrates to the point that my burning back feels the breeze. When I reach for the reserve coolant bottle, I find my glass ground hand no longer works. The fingers cannot grip the cap to turn it. The sky bursts into light in the east. Clouds pop with gold and violet and red. Dragonfire. Somewhere over the driftless dunes, Chris's party has been intercepted at last.
Shit,
Cadwall says to Ariel in dragon tongue.
Shit! We're in the wrong.
The skyfish peel off me one by one, signalling with horns to the Storm Scourge pair behind, calling them off my tail as they turn east. I should follow them, try to detain them, but I can barely see for pain. I remind myself they're miles behind, and their likelihood of catching up with Chris's group is low. Ayla is slowing, gasping, allowing herself to coast for the first time since we took flight. But then light explodes behind, and we turn to see a single black dragon still on our tail. The rest of the Grey Riders peeled off, but Edmund Greyheather and his great Storm Scourge Envy are closing in.
Lee. No sooner have we cleared the highest turrets of the Firemouth than the stars go out. We hear a growl so deep and loud it sounds like it comes from the bowels of the earth. Obizuth expands from Pytho's keep with a darkness that envelops half the sky. And then we collide with a moving wall. Wham! Palor spins off course like a bird hitting a window. Obizuth's tail, slinging through the dark, catches him on the stomach. We're spinning, losing altitude. Wham! A second time. I feel it wind him, wind us. The third swing, Palor just manages to roll out of the way, hammering the wind with his wings to steady himself. He fires. But he might as well be firing at the cast itself for all Obizuth feels it. How did they ever bring these monsters down? My ancestors did it, during the Basileian Wars. But as we dodge this moving mountain, the idea of subduing her is unimaginable. Don't bother attacking. We just have to get past her. The next time the great dragon's tail swings, whistling in the dark, we dive. We race along her back, following the crest of her scales, through the hollow between her wings, over her horned crown, and into the dark. A snap behind us, too close. A great maw closing on air, fangs gnashing in the dark. We hear her roar behind us as we leave Obizuth and Freyda behind. And then we race north, following the trail of flares Annie Suela leaves in the wake of her flight.
Annie. At the sight of Edmund behind us, I dig my knees into Ayla's flanks. We shouldn't have slowed. Go, go. But Edmund's dragon lunges. Ayla shrieks as his talons hook into her wings. They pull. Edmund's distinctive hair-raising belly laugh is disembodied in the darkness. We both scream as her wings puncture. Ayla twists, her sharp fangs piercing the shoulder of the overbearing Storm Scourge, and as he yelps, she kicks free and sets off again. But now it's not just me suffering injuries. Ayla's wings are cut open. I can feel her tiring, her agony spilling into me as our pain ricochets. We try rising into the cloudy night, then fluking into the cover of the sloping forest. But no matter how hard she pummels the air with her punctured, bleeding wings, the Storm Scourge is always just a little closer behind, running us down. Ayla's beginning to hack from exhaustion as her wings falter. Branches pummel our faces, disturbed snow exploding in white bursts around us as we sink lower. Her strength is giving out. I lay a hand on her flank. It's all right, Ayla. Find us a defensive position. She skids down a gorge and splashes under a rocky overhang where a brook turns. The stirrups snap like dried twigs as I slide from her back. Stars peep beneath fir boughs, where here and there the clouds have parted. Low on the horizon, growing steadily larger, loom the black wings of the Storm Scourge still tracking us. Edmund saw our descent. Ayla's wings tremble with the effort of lifting to mantle me. It takes equal effort to rise to my feet beside her. Steady, I say, for myself as much as for her. The wet stone is cold under my boots, charred soles. Highland air, fresher than anything I've breathed in weeks, fills my lungs. It smells like home. Edmund Sewer Envy dives, and Ayla fires everything she has left. I can feel it leaving us. The last burst of energy draining us down to the tips of our talons and the ends of our toes. And then she's done. She's run out. And Edmund is still there, chuckling. Ayla takes a step forward, spreading her wings between me and our attackers. The Storm Scourge is so much bigger than her. We can still see Edmund's white slash of a grin. Get them. Edmund says. His dragon lunges.
Lee. We hear them before we find them. Ayla snarling, Annie screaming. Edmund's terrible laugh. His Storm Scourge, twice the size of Ayla, has thrown her to the ground. Edmund hasn't bothered to dismount. He clings to his dragon's back, relishing the mauling as Ayla squirms beneath them. Palor can smell her blood and her fear, and even my human ears can hear the ripping. Envy has Ayla pinned in his talons. The only reason I'm not too late is that he's decided to take his time. Instead of going for her jugular, he's shredding her wings with his teeth. Annie's shrieks mingle with Ayla's and reverberate on the stones. I can just barely see her shadowed form doubled over at the back of the cave, clutching her arms where Ayla's wings tear. But Edmund's saving the rider for last. I can hear him egging his dragon on. They're taking their time with Ayla because they want to enjoy it. Fury rises in me such as I have never known. A dragon's fury, Palor's rage, engulfs mine. So consumed are they with their sport that they don't hear the soft thump of our landing behind them. Palor pounces, a silver snake in the dark, and his jaws close over my half-brother's head. It crushes like a melon. Before Envy has time to register what has happened, Palor tears his rider from the back of his dragon by the head and hurls him against the rocks like a rag doll. The sickening crunch of a body on impact sounds good. The sharp, fresh scent of human blood bursts in the air. Envy goes rigid at the sound, then rears. He screams. I've heard the widow cry before. Then, as now, it was from a dragon that belonged to Kin. When it was Julia's dragon, it gutted me. Today, I feel nothing but visceral satisfaction. The Storm Scourge rounds on us, turning his back on Ayla's crumpled form, and Palor bares his fangs. Though he's larger than Ayla, he's still outsized by Edmund's Storm Scourge. I've no doubt we'd be their equal in a tournament, even a duel. But in this scrabble on the rocks, any skill in the air is lost advantage. Envy spreads his wings to show their full span, and Palor's crest flattens as he goes low to the ground, taking the defensive position. I clamp my knees against the saddle and reach for both boot knives. Steady. Envy pounces. Palor and I launch under and up. Palor's fangs spread wide and dart for Envy's protruding neck, puncturing it. As his maw summons flame, I dodge the heat and jam my boot knives under his chin. I yank them together. The scales tear open like plates of rusted metal. A hot rush of blood drenches my face, my chest, my shoulders. The fiery glow in Envy's maw goes out. He sways, then he topples with a colossal smack into the blackness of the flowing brook. I slice the straps that hold my boots in their stirrups, slide from Palor's back, and scramble toward Annie and Ayla, wiping dragon's blood from my face as I go. We find them curled together under the rock overhang, 2 meters away, a shadowy huddle in the moonlight. Ayla whimpers from a bed of blood-black snow where her wings lie shredded and inert. Annie's hand is a bloody pulp that she cradles. The back of her suit is mostly burned away. I'm here, I'm here. I hardly know who I'm speaking to or who is speaking as I take Annie into my arms. Palor goes to Ayla, he nuzzles her, and she whimpers. Annie stares back at me with spillover wide pupils, shuddering. It's so cold, our breath rises in steam. Hylie. She's in shock. I think they both are. Hey, that's a lot of blood. Not mine. Do you think they made it? I realize she's talking about the Guardians. The coup, the politics, the war all feel distant, like a dream I fled. What's real is the girl in my arms and the bloody dragon beside her. They're my responsibility now. My only responsibility. You had half the Grey Riders on your tail. Krissa and the others would have been more than capable of throwing off the rest of them. They made it. Annie closes her eyes. I take stock of our situation as my heart beats slow. The sky, a gash of starry blue, shows no sign of aerial battles taking place to the east. We've crash-landed in a shallow gorge between 2 ridgelines, cutting off a view of the lowlands. If we can't see their fire, they couldn't see ours. We're safe here for the time being, if nobody freezes, bleeds out, or dies from infected burns. The principles of first aid return to me from distant memories of basic training. Stabilize the injuries, control the environment, find help. The rock overhang that Annie and Ayla have backed into becomes a shallow cave, the stones dry a few feet deeper in. It'll have to do. After a quick rinse in the stream, I pile winter dry vines torn from the rocks on the dry stones, which Palor lights. Beside the fire, I lay out the once white ceremonial mantle I've still got pinned to my shoulders and help Annie lower herself onto it. It's stiff with dragon's blood. Ayla's worse off than me. The dragon's wings have been torn from the dactyl down. Palor, curled around her, is licking them carefully. She'll need stitches before she flies again. But she's already stopped bleeding. Annie's the one at greatest risk for infection. I'm more worried about you, honestly. Can you extricate? Annie shakes her head. So that's how much pain they're in. Okay, that's okay. I rummage in her saddlebag. When I find honey preserved in a heat-resistant scale tin, I let out a slow exhale of relief. A painkiller and a disinfecting agent, honey is a rider's best friend for burns on the road. Annie sees it and lets out a rattling laugh. Chrissa always knew how to pack a bag. I use my father's boot knife to cut what remains of her flame suit off her back and rub honey on the burns. Annie is too tired to think of modesty, though when I strip off my ceremonial armor and pull the outer tunic over my head, she reaches for it. I help her cover herself. Last of all, I take her hand and pluck out the shards of Ixion's whiskey tumbler, silently cursing him, cursing my family, cursing my blood. We rinse her hand in the brook, and I wrap the wound in strips of fabric torn from the lining of my mantle. I have her drink more water from my cupped hands. That's when I notice that this brook, though fresh and flowing merrily, is warm. It's the first time I have an inkling of where we might be. Palor curls round Ayla at the entrance to the cave, making a wall of warmth that cocoons us. I smother the fire, lie down beside Annie, and wrap the mantle over us. No sooner has she begun to relax than she stiffens again. The engagement, she realizes, sitting up. Oh, dragons, the engagement. Lee, you have to go back. It's off. Oh, says Annie. For the entirety of my ministrations, she has remained calm, dry-faced, cool-voiced. But now I hear it wobble for the first time. But that was the plan. Is she so disappointed I'm not getting married to someone else? I figured I was more needed here. To my exasperation, her shoulders have started to heave. She's crying. Look, I say, preparing to explain what I think should be pretty damn obvious. But then she says, I'm really glad you're not marrying her. She's full on sobbing now. As I understand, my eyes grow hot. Her back is turned to me, her movements too slow and stiff for her to do much more than lean a bit against me as her shoulders shake. But I bend over to kiss her forehead. I'm glad I'm not marrying her too. For a moment, the only sound is the brook rushing away in the night. What do we do now? Annie murmurs. We sleep. Tomorrow, we find someone who can stitch a dragon's wing. In the Highlands, I hear her skepticism. I'll have to wait for dawn to know for sure, but I'd guess we're close. If I'm not mistaken, the warm brook puts us closer than I could have hoped. The river source, which marks the boundary between the near and far Highlands, must be just upstream, and from there, I'll know the way. Whether it's passable on foot is another question. I've got a place in mind.
Part 3. Exile.
21. The refuge that awaits. Griff, Norcia. It's got to be a sin to hammer on a bedroom door this early in the morning. The sun probably isn't even up yet. Dragonborn blankets are unbelievably soft, and I've got 3 all to myself, a cocoon that beckons me back to nothingness. When I dream these days, my dreams are of the sea, of Da's ship sailing through parting storms as if he were not, like Aga, like Grandad, like Garrett, gone. It was a good dream, and I'd like to go back to it. Every knock on that door pulses directly into my skull. Go away! But whoever knocks doesn't go away. The door creaks and the curtains rattle as they're drawn back. An unseemly amount of sunlight pours into the room. When I pulled the bedclothes farther up my face, they yanked back by small hands. Wake up, Uncle! Beck is beaming, her face inches from mine. Antigone's coming! Antigone's coming with 10 dragons! What madness is this? Not madness, Bran's voice says. I was on watch when we sighted them, too far to make out the call markings yet, but they're definitely guardians. They'll be here within the hour. Antigone, Becca repeats, bouncing on her feet. It has to be Antigone. Looks like little blustering duck was right after all. I sit up, palming my eyes open. I didn't know light came this bright in Norcia. Whatever is coming from the windows might actually be slicing my head in two. Bran standing by the opened curtains, his arms folded. You should put clothes on, and maybe wash. Becca giggles. Bran winks at her. I kick them out. 10 minutes later, I step out the manor door, dressed and bathed, to find Sparker saddled and waiting for me, courtesy of Becca and Bran. That's when I realize it's been over a week since I last rode him. Not just that, it's been a week since I've seen the sun. Shrines. What have I been doing with myself? Beds need to be prepared, and stalls for their dragons. Fiona's got them preparing guest rooms in the provisional palace. Duck and Dilo have been working on the stalls for the last week. At his mention, I have the flashing image of Dilo's face in shadow, a single eyebrow lifted. Have I seen him recently? That doesn't add up. I've got nothing to say to Dilo. But then, there are whole swaths of the last few days I find I can't remember. Nag Manor's liquor cabinet must be pretty close to empty by now. You get a sense of the shape their riders are in? Bran shakes his head. Too far off. I reach for the flame suit that's suddenly within arm's reach. Becca's beneath it. Pretty sure Ixion wouldn't let 10 dragons fly off without a fight. Ixion's not that stupid. Or blind. It probably got hot. Antigone likely started out with more riders, and these are the ones who made it. Still, 10 dragons to fortify our fleet isn't half bad. And it'll be good to see the little first rider again. The day of the liberation, we hardly said goodbye. I remember how I found her on that collapsed karst after the explosion, tearing her hair at our failure, as in my arms I held. Not that. Suddenly, I'm itching for the saddle. I'll ride out to meet them, I tell Bran as I shrug on the flame suit. Make sure healers are ready at the balustrades for when we arrive. Can I come too, Uncle? Becca asks. Not this time, love. Her hair's not been brushed in what looks like days. Who's in charge of her hair? Am I in charge of her hair? How do I not even know? Who brushes your hair? Lena, says Becca. Lena? She's not even our kin. She doesn't even live here. Though, come to think of it, I don't know where she lives, now that she's no longer obliged to live in an unlocked prison cell. Somewhere in the Citadel with Duck, maybe. Well, go ask Lena to brush it, then. My head's still splitting, but kicking off from the ground leaves some of the pain behind. We meet the incoming dragon riders midway over Sailor's Folly. The North Sea has gifted them with a glorious blue sky welcome that's so unlike any weather they're going to see in Norcia hereafter, it feels like a bad joke. At the head of the Kallipolan party, I find not the little amber Aurelian I'm expecting, but a skyfish who pulls ahead of her riders to join my wing. When she takes off her helmet, I recognize her with some foreboding as the fair-haired scout I once mauled. Her long blonde braid gleams in the uncannily bright sun. Hello again, Griff, she says in decent school dragon tongue. I hope you will be more willing to talk this time than last. It takes me a second to realize she's teasing. Ah, yeah. Her laugh is breezy. Good. I'm Chrissa Serfidra, Skyfish Squadron Leader, and this is Corso Morana, Storm Scourge Squadron Leader. A second dragon has joined us. Cor removes his helmet, revealing dark wavy hair and a square jaw I recognize. You're Dorian's brother. It's true he's alive then? Cor asks eagerly. Alive and well. Got himself a Norsian girlfriend, even. Cor goggles. Duck's got a girlfriend. I can't help laughing at his incredulity. His back's a web of burns, some older and some fresh, no flame suit to be seen. I glance back at the group behind them. All are in various states of burned tatters, few flame suits between them. So it did get hot. We had to get out in a hurry, Chrissa says. Full gear wasn't possible. Any losses? Chrissa swallows. Some, she says. Where's the first rider? Chrissa looks at Cor, who shakes his head. She was supposed to join us on the way. We don't know what happened to her.
22. The Old Road. Lee, the Highlands. I get us moving a few hours before dawn, determined to be miles away before anyone comes looking for Edmund. Annie lets out a slow groan in my arms when I say her name. My shoulders so stiff from her using it as a pillow, it's lost feeling. I haven't slept myself. Already? I'm sorry. The night lends itself to whispering, though there's little need for it. Palor nudges Ayla, who growls at him. Annie gets to her feet slowly and sluggishly. Buck up, Ayla. Ayla struggles to her feet. They're both in a pitiful state. Annie's riding boots are torn to tatters. Ayla's wings limp and stringy. We cut the leather straps from the girth of Ayla's no longer needed saddle and use them to bind her wings, hoisting them from the ground to keep them clean and safe from dragging. Palor would let you ride him, I tell Annie. She shakes her head. If Ayla walks, I walk. So we bind her boots together too. The night sky has cleared and the moon is close enough to full that it casts shadows on the hulking carcass of the Storm Scourge and his rider, half submerged in the brook. Annie waits while I carry Edmund's remains to the shore. If he's found, they'll be able to provide him a proper burial. I'm surprised by how little beyond that I care. After killing a cousin I loved, what remorse is left for killing a half-brother I hated? The emotions are already cut away like dried vines. We make our way upstream on the sodden, moonlit banks. I lead the way, testing the mossy stones for smooth and solid footing, gripping Annie's arm to support her. Ayla follows behind, and Palor takes up the rear, prompting her when she falters. Compared with the ease of flight, it's painfully slow going. Every time we stop, I make Annie drink water. Her burns will be dehydrating her. Gradually, the banks rise and the sky lightens. Annie's slow steps grow slower, but she makes no complaint except to ask, "You sure this is the way?" The water's warm. It's got to be a distributary of the river source. The hot springs that feed the fur where my oldest Storm Scourge ancestors hatched their first dragon eggs. The rim of the river source connects to the Robber Road, which will take us the rest of the way. The Robber Road? I've translated it uncomfortably into Kalish. After a floundering description, Annie hums with sudden understanding. The Old Road, she corrects softly. We called it the Old Road. I know it by the dragon tongue, as my father called it. Before early Aurelian settlers carved roads into the highlands to make them passable for their horses and carriages, a footpath linked the cliff towns of the northern coast. the way of thieves and brigands, my father would muse as he studied the map. But Annie's we refers to the highlands she's from, to the peasants who worked this land but were not allowed to call its fruits their own. They would have had their own reasons for needing a secret road to pass undetected. I don't call it the robber road again. We find the rim of the river source at sunrise. The dragons wait, hidden beneath low boughs of fir trees, as we scramble to the barren ridge and look down. That's where I killed Julia. The river source steams and overflows from the depths of the fissure, a black pool of heat. No evidence is left of the duel. The body of Julia's storm scourge, Erinys, was long ago retrieved for processing as armor, and Julia's returned to her people. I'm surprised to find, looking down on the place, that I feel none of the original agony. Instead, I have the thought that I'm looking on the place that made me. This is where I became the revolution's son, of no father and no house. The sun lights the ridgelines of the highlands, gilding peaks still white with snow and accenting firs so dark a green they look black. Slender blankets of fog creep slowly over the hills, but the skies are clear. A patrolling pair of dragons skims a ridgeline some miles away. Annie shields her eyes to study them. One of those is Powis your Eater. With vindictive satisfaction, I mutter, traitor. Annie's voice is quiet.
I don't think so.
He recognized me in the palace. He kept my cover. And he's very close to his mum. He must be terrified for her. I don't want to know how Annie knows this. I don't want to know this. Power's much easier to despise, and I've got more practice doing it. I'm glad when she changes the subject. Do you think they'll look for us after they find Edmund? Not here. They won't know he shredded Ayla's wings. They've got no reason to think we're on foot. Still, we leave the dragons in the cover of the firs while we search the rim for signs of a trail. Annie's the one who finally notices the small stone marker half submerged in snow. And a little further past it, the narrow stone stairs leading down from the ridge in two directions. To the east, just visible poking above the treetops, are the crenellated towers of the great house of Nearhall, seat of the Storm Scourge Triarch. The river source served as the estate's breeding spring. To the west, the old road continues into the far highlands and would take us all the way to Dragon's End if we wanted it to. But our destination lies closer than that. We return to the dragons to find a mountain hare dangling limply from Palor's moor. We don't usually let the dragons out from the great palace to hunt. Farmers don't appreciate it. But that doesn't mean they can't. He looks terribly pleased with himself. And I'm flooded with relief myself. I'd been wondering all morning how we would find food. Well done, you. He smokes the little body, fur and all, and then tears it into strips, feeding us one by one. Ayla, Annie, me. The meat is a perfect medium rare. Annie scarfs it down and says solemnly, with juice dripping down her chin, "This is the best breakfast I've ever had." Her eyes are black with spillover. I try not to laugh. "I think you might be channeling Ayla." Personally, I'm craving bread, but I have a feeling we won't be seeing any for a while. When fog rolls over our ridge, we make our way down the westward fork of the old road in its cover and cross into the far highlands. I'm surprised how passable the path remains centuries later, even in winter. Though we glimpse occasional villages and hamlets through patches in the woodlands, we see no other travellers. False forks every few miles along the trail lead to shallow caves, called cavates, that have been carved out of the limestone and can be used as shelter. For smugglers to hide in, I wonder. Annie hums again. Older than that, I think. Dad said they were built to hide from dragons back when they roamed wild. By mid-afternoon, her bandages are seeping blood and pus through the back of her tunic, and she's shivering beneath the mantle I've wrapped round her. Ayla's tail droops so badly it drags on the ground. The road opens out at the base of a hill whose sheep-dotted ridgeline I recognize at once. Now that we see it, I can't believe I didn't realize we would pass it. Of course. We're close enough now that we've entered the old feudal landholdings, and that village is Holbin Hill. The village where Annie was born. The village my father burned down. Right now, all I can think about is their larders. Annie, I say, slowing. Smoke rises from the chimneys of the collection of squat houses at the top of the hill, inviting. The afternoon, quiet. We haven't seen any patrolling dragon riders for hours. I imagine warming my numb, cold hands by a fireplace. Annie looks up at Holbin and her shoulders draw up to her ears. They're stained brown from the tea she's been sweating from her hair. No, she says, like she knows exactly what I'm about to propose. They could help us. No, Annie says again. The thought of bread is making my mouth water. We wouldn't even need to take the dragons. We could just go ask. Do you know what happened the last time I went home? Annie turns to glare at me. I was spat on. They hate me. Just like everyone on this whole island, they hate me. They won't help us. Annie's bald assessment of her status gives me whiplash. It's too enormous to argue with. I feel desperation rising. Maybe I could. You! She stopped. For a brief glare, she takes in the length of me, and then she actually laughs. I can promise your popularity with the commoners of Kallipolis will not extend to Holbin Hill, Leo. My face heats as if it had been slapped. Come on, she says, turning. Fury fuels her steps with renewed vigor. She leads us away from Holbin without looking back. We don't speak again until dusk. The trail has begun to climb steadily, more often stairs than not, and the ridgeline that will face us tomorrow is the sheerest yet. It's up there. Annie cranes her neck to take in the steep wall rising, blotting the sky above us. At the base, a seamless snowdrift buries trees for miles, and the old road disappears entirely. It's passable on foot? She's not wrong to ask. I remember arriving by Dragonback with my father, but mother and the servants took a different path, a fork from the Aurelian way that led to a stair, and I just have to find it. There's a way. We'll look for it in the morning. We take shelter in one of the cavates off the old road next to a fall of melting snow water. Palor starts a fire from damp wood he bullies into sparking. Ayla lowers herself into the ice-cold pool with a groan. Our backs warming from the fire, Annie and I remove our boots and place blistered feet in the water beside her. At my asking, Annie rolls up her tunic for me to check the dressings on her back. This whole island doesn't hate you, I tell her. Her back is turned, the nubs of her spine poking from angry red skin. She shakes her head. There were these girls I worked with in the palace. Lovely girls, cheapsiders. They told me everything they thought of the bitch commander. I cup water to run over the burns. You're not. The city slur sticks on my tongue like old porridge. A bitch commander. She closes her eyes, and wetness leaks from beneath the closed lids. It doesn't matter anymore. I can't think how it doesn't. But she sounds almost relieved. Ixion's first rider now, and they can forget all about me. I'm retired. That's the first time I realize Annie thinks she's done with Kallipolis, for good. I reach for her hand to unwrap the bindings. You don't think the people deserve better than that? Annie lifts a shoulder. At least with Freyda, they're not starving. Annie, spare me the class iron propaganda sheets. It's a retort from our classroom days as guardians in training. Her eyes flare open. You left them to Ixion and Freyda too? No.
I came to save their first rider. I'm trying to get Ayla's wings stitched so they can return to our fleet in Norcia, and from there... Annie sees the answer in my eyes and pulls her hand from mine. I'm done, Lee. I failed. So that's what she thinks of it? That she failed? How? Annie's chest is heaving, her breathing labored, her eyes bright. Did you know that in Norcia, peasant girls pretended to be me? It was considered such a dangerous sign of rebellion that their parents had to ban them from it for fear of crackdowns by the Dragonborn. I didn't know that. I can only imagine how it felt for Annie, water on parched earth, to be a symbol of hope. The laurel I've borne easily for as long as I can remember that she's never been fitted with. When Kallipolans weren't too bigoted to believe a low-born girl was worthy, they were mad at her for doing a terrible job well. But that must have felt good. Annie shakes her head forcefully. It did feel good. That's what I'm trying to say. It was the only thing I'd ever felt good at, helping Griff and the Norcians. I was finally the hero, not the bitch commander. And I helped, it's true, I helped liberate a people. But in doing so, I forsook my vows. All those times Holmes told me to stop fraternizing with Norcian peasants and do my job. He was right. Ixion slipped in while my back was turned. I was in Norcia playing the hero when our revolution was defeated. I didn't defend my city as I'd sworn to do. I left it in its hour of need and Kallipolis fell. So don't tell me I didn't fail. She is shaking with suppressed sobs gripping her knees as she hunches over. The moment is broken by the thump of another dead hare landing at her feet. Palor peers into her face. When she opens her eyes, she lets out a faint laugh. Well, at least the dragons like me, she says, opening her palm to him. We chew our way through more game in silence, and though I sense she's glad for the conversation to be finished, I can't stop myself saying it. It's the Alternus's job to defend. The First Rider's job to attack, the Alternus's job to defend. She wasn't the one who failed, I was. Annie blinks at me. She sets aside bones she stripped clean and wipes her mouth with the back of her hand. Where we're going, she says, will its new owner mind we're dropping in? I don't think so. Really? Her voice becomes hesitant. Who is the new owner? I think I am. For a moment, Annie stares at me. Then her voice becomes cautious indeed. Lee? She's looking like she worries I'm delusional. I hasten to tell her about Dora Mithridates' inheritance clause. Edmund Greyheather was supposed to take it from her, but obviously he now can't. I'm sure they'll change the paperwork when they bother to look at it, but I don't think they will for a while yet. The estate's been stripped of its holdings, and what's left is too remote to be valuable. Annie's lip is quirking. So you're the Lord of Farhall after all that? Yeah, I say, reddening. Well, my lord, she says tartly, lying back on the mossy bank. I hope your house has very soft beds. I stretch out beside her. A handful of stars have already winked to life, brushed by the swaying fingers of the fir trees. The fire warms our faces as the pool relieves our aching feet. I know we should move into the covert to take shelter and attempt to sleep. But neither of us seems able to summon up the energy to move from the pool's edge. There's a splash as Ayla climbs from the water, shakes like a dog, and nuzzles into Palor's side. Annie speaks to the stars above us, her voice barely louder than the falls. Is it true you killed Atreus? I keep my eyes on the swaying branches. Yeah, but not like they said. You made your peace with him? Only Annie could guess such a thing. He told me to take care of you. Annie turns to look at me. Really? She deadpans. He said those words exactly. Well, maybe not exactly. Annie snorts. She rolls over and kisses me on the nose. You rogue, she says. Annie and Ayla have both taken a turn for the worse by the following morning. Ayla's spilling over into Annie again. The rips in her wings have reopened and are bleeding, and neither of them has an appetite for the game Palor rattles in front of us. He has to masticate and feed Ayla like a hatchling, and then he begins licking her wings while she whimpers. Annie's curled into her knees, grey-faced.
How much farther?
A half day, tops. We just have to find the entrance to the stairs and climb that. Annie's gaze travels slowly up the cliff that rises over us. Her laugh is faint. I leave her with the dragons and search alone, suppressing growing panic. I know the ridge and even the ravine that connects to the stair to the old road and the Aurelian Way, which continues to Dragon's End. But the private stair is deliberately camouflaged, and what I remember of it, I saw after spring thaws. This far north, the snowdrifts have accumulated in meters, rendering the landscape I remember unrecognizable. Not to mention, I never knew it from the ground. Finally, I make my way back to Annie and the dragons. She and Ayla are slumped, Palor alone awake, his wing mantling Ayla. I need to see it from Dragonback. It's late morning and the sun is already high on the steepled horizon. Annie stirs and blinks the light from her eyes. You'll be seen. Palor's snow-colored, he'll camouflage. We risk a brief flight. At once, as the ground falls away and the ridges around us shift apart, the world turns from foreign to familiar. This is how I knew the Far Highlands as a child. On Dragonback, with my father, we'd rise to the summit and catch first glimpse of the North Sea, peeping between cracks in the cliffs, as the servants trailed up the stair below, bearing our luggage and the family's litters. We made the journey in late summer when the hills rippled with heather. It takes surprising force of will to resist taking Palor all the way up. Instead, we glide low, skimming the snowbanks that climb the cliffs, until we spot the switchbacking stair emerging from them. Palor drops his tail into the snow and drags it all the way back to the overhang where Annie and Ayla wait, leaving a trail in the snow behind him. On the ground, we retrace it on foot. Palor clears the snow by burrowing into it. The panic we're both feeling about Annie's and Ayla's worsening state renews our vigor. But even the trail he clears is tough walking, and Annie and Ayla begin to stop for longer and longer periods to pant, knee-deep in snow. Ayla's wings leave bloody streaks in the white that Palor flicks his tail over to hide. We're nearly there.
You mean we're nearly to the stair, Annie corrects faintly. That we've got to climb.
The steps are steep, but well insulated from the wind, cut so deep into the escarpment that they're more like a shallow tunnel zigzagging through the limestone. The steps were designed for horses. The dragons will have to go on their bellies. It's lucky that they're Aurelians because it wouldn't be passable for a storm scourge. I fasten the sling containing Ayla's torn wings closer to her side, and Palor nudges her up after us as we begin our ascent.
I can't believe your family climbed this every year, Annie says, panting.
I can carry you.
You will not, Annie says.
But by mid-afternoon, halfway up, her legs give out, and I hoist her onto my back. Truth be told, they had litters. Her voice is faint in my ear.
Oh, so people like me carried people like you.
I shift her legs more securely around my waist. Yep.
Tell me about your house.
My house? The truth is, I'm frightened to see it again for how beautiful I remember it being, and more frightened at the idea of showing it to Annie.
I keep imagining I'll either find it burned down or, worse, in perfectly good repair, only to have Annie look upon it in horror. She wouldn't without reason. This was what you lived in while we starved?
It's obscenely grand, I tell her recklessly. A whole room just for china. Chandeliers with crystals the size of your fist. The walls are covered in wolf heads.
You're joking.
No, we hunt them. It's our service to the local peasantry.
Oh, I see. Thank you. That's too kind.
I wonder whether we're both delirious. Annie hums into my shoulder. She's still for so long, I think she might have fallen asleep. Eventually, all I can feel is the burning in my calves and Palor's panic. It's starting to spill over at a rate I don't try to manage. Ayla's tail drags on the stairs. When she slows, he nips gently at her haunches and she shuffles on. Until finally she doesn't.
Annie?
Annie stirs and answers the unspoken question.
She needs to rest.
I let Ayla rest for a half hour. Then Palor forces her to her feet. We filled our canteens with melting snow before mounting the stairs, and I've not spared any for myself or Palor. Ayla takes the last of it. Palor fairly goads her the final few switchbacks, up toward the light growing at the end of the tunnel, and we spill out onto the cliff walk to a sudden smell of salt. The North Sea spreads below. The water has turned silver, flecked with the gold of a setting sun. Cloud tendrils caress the cliff face and refract the rich light. Sailor's Folly is stubble on the eastern horizon. Level with us, a line of pelicans flows high over the churning waves.
See, we've made it, we're here, I say. Far Hall's just around the...
I turn to find Ayla collapsed on the stairs, her eyes closed, her breath faint. Her wings ripple loosely in the wind. The slings come undone.
Annie?
But she's out too. I lower Annie to the ground beside her dragon and tell Palor,
wait with them here.
Palor claws at the stone, snorting and glaring at me as if to say, hurry. I take off up the cliff walk at a run. The salt breeze fills my lungs, the surf crashing far below pounds in my ears. The sun is dipping into the waves, the sky full of fire, when the cliff wall to my left finally opens into green pasture, sheltered on all sides by snow-capped escarpments. On the far side of the pasture, looking out over the North Sea, is Far Hall. I have a few gasping breaths as I bolt up the drive to confirm that it's exactly as I remember it. The gardens, the vineyard, the brook, a black ribbon through the green. The big house, built to withstand winds and to keep out long winters with thick stone walls and narrow windows. Its roof is so weathered and mossy it looks like a second garden. By the standards of the Skyfish Summer Palace, or the Great Palace in the capital, or even of Near Hall in the Middle Highlands, this house is humble. But to me, it looks like home. The grouting's recently been retouched, and the vines that cling to the windows look no more than a season old, but the shutters are drawn. It seems the manor has been maintained under Dora's ownership, but not inhabited. I don't stop to inspect further. I dash past it to the groundskeeper's cottage, buttressed against the near escarpment, and hammer on the bolted door.
Mr. Garth! Mr. Garth, please open up!
I haven't got anything to go by more than a hunch that the servant listed on the deed is the same one I knew as a child, or even that Nigel Garth will be glad to see Leon's youngest son. But I remember my father's groundskeeper as a man who liked dragons better than people. If he's still here, and it's dragons he's loyal to, I've got dragons for him. There's smoke rising from the chimney, but the door doesn't open. And then comes his voice from behind me, 10 years older than I remember.
Turn around slowly, boy. I don't like unplanned visitors.
I rotate on my heel. Nigel Garth has a weathered face where it once was smooth, his brown hair now peppered with grey,
and his long, narrow frame is even more wiry than I remember. He's pointing a crossbow at my chest. As he sees my face, his eyes widen. I don't hear what he says next because I am bowled over by a grey blur. Enormous paws are planted over my chest, a grey muzzle lowers to look at me with fogging eyes. And then Argos, whom I remember as a yearling wolfhound, begins to lick my face as his whole body wags with his tail. I reach up to scratch him beneath the fuzzy ears, and the corner of my eyes prickle. Argos! You and me both, huh? When I'd read on the deed, groundskeeper and dog, it had been too strange to think of. That I wasn't the only one who survived, that maybe that dog was this dog, the one I remembered. Now I rub Argos's scruff the way my father did, as my vision blurs. Larissa and I used to take rides on his back. Nigel sets aside the crossbow. My lord, I'd heard rumors, but didn't dare believe. Argos, get off him! I roll out from under Argos and onto my feet, wiping slobber that hasn't changed in 10 years from my face. And suddenly, despite the desperation, despite my fear for Annie and Ayla, my heart is light because I'm home. This tiny corner of the world is still, in some small way, mine. I didn't lose everything after all. Mr. Garth, there's a downed dragon at the cliff walk. She's wounded. She needs help. Yours? Not mine, but mine's with her. It's a friend's. I remember Garth as being supremely calm in a crisis and always up to any task my father had for him. Today is no different. He asks no more questions, only steps inside to find the gear he needs and emerges 2 minutes later with a medical kit and water. Lead the way.
23. A Norsian Welcome. Griff. Norsia. On the Citadel balustrades, the Kallipolan riders are greeted by their lost comrade, Dorian Sutter. Kor grips his brother's face in both hands and kisses his forehead and cheeks ferociously while Duck laughs. They're speaking in a torrent of Kalish, while Lena waits to be introduced. I wonder if she's imagining, like I am, finding out a lost loved one wasn't really gone for good. Dilo waits in the shadow, watching me, like he doesn't get that the whole point is we pretend the other doesn't exist now. Or at least, I think we don't. Again, I can't shake the feeling we've been spending a lot of time in each other's company at that particular stage of the night where I've started doing everything I can do to make the world go dark. In the blurry memories of that darkness, Dilo remains silhouetted and clear. When Fiona taps my shoulder, I'm glad for the excuse to turn from him. She's got a hand up under her belly like she's propping it, the other braced on her dragon's crest. When did the child get so big? We've got a flotilla of small craft entering Sailor's Folly from the south, she says. Military? Refugees, I think. Chrysis or Phaedra were saying some of the Guardian's families were attempting to get out during an amnesty window. Fiona has lowered her voice, though none but Duck would be able to understand her Norish. We watch the Guardians dismounting, greeting their comrades, being welcomed by Lena and the clan healers, who've been summoned to assist the wounded. Chrysa has wrapped her arms around Duck, slapping his spotty beard with a watery laugh while he stutters sheepishly. Pretty sure the word for straggly is the same in Kalish as Norish. When he presents Lena to them, Chrysa hugs Lena like a long-lost sister, and Kor kisses her face, too. You and my brother? He shouts in terrible dragon tongue, gesturing between them with waving arms. Lena covers her mouth as she giggles. Kor, she's Norsian, not deaf, Duck says, rolling his eyes. And then, as the questions continue, the smiles start to fade and heads start to shake. Duck's asking after guardians he was expecting to see. I hear names I know. Lee, Annie, and then more I don't. Lotus, Deirdre, Alexa. And then when he says, rock, Chrysis or Phaedra begins to weep. Grey Riders, Kor is saying, his voice hoarse, and then, power, Sir Aether. I know that one. That was Antigone's friend, the one who came to the Driftless Dunes with us when she was teaching me to read Dragon Tongue. What are they saying? Dilo starts, not expecting me to have joined his side, not expecting me to talk to him. I've asked him before I had time to stop to think I shouldn't. The thing is, I know he must know Kalish, even if he grew up speaking Dragon Tongue in Kallipolis. This is the language his servants would have spoken. Dilo's always been good at learning the languages of servants. Now, of course, he looks as servile as the rest of us. It's still odd to see him in commoner's clothing, an undyed tunic, sweat-stained and soiled from working in the